a magical kingdom in a mixed up world. You're in the sweet spot, baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. You're in the sweet spot, darling. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world.
Welcome to the Sweep Spot Podcast. My name is Lynn, your host, and Ken's my co-host. Ken, how's it going?
Oh, Lynn, it is going. It is going. I am so happy to be here for this episode of the Sweep Spot.
You're wondering, who are these guys? We are both former Disneyland Custodial cast members, and we host the number one Disneyland podcast hosted by two former Disneyland custodians.
Number one.
We are also authors of the books Cleaning the Kingdom. You can get signed copies of the second book. On our website, you can get both books not signed on Amazon in paperback, and you can also get digital copies like on Kindle, Apple Books, wherever those are found, and audio books are both books are on audio. You can get those where audio books are found, usually like Audible is a good place. So get those. Also, if you want to join our Patreon, really helps us out, and we have a lot of fun doing these. You get some cool perks. We do a bonus episode once a month that gets delivered to you, and you also get to join in the chat room as we record our current events once a month, which is a lot of fun. Also, you can join for $5 or more per month and get those perks over at patreon.com or go to the Sweep Spot website and look for the Patreon link there and sign up. And if you don't want the perks, but you're like, I want to help them a little bit, but I don't really have a lot of money, and I totally understand that. We have people that give a dollar, and it goes a long way. So we really do appreciate everyone that gives to that. It's really nice and overwhelming to see that. So thank you very much. But also wanted to mention, we're going to be at the D23 Expo or whatever they're calling it, the Ultimate Fan Event. And that's going to be in August. And we will be at a booth there. In past years, if you've come by to see us, we were at a booth all day long, all 3 days. We will not do that this year, but we will be at Laughing Places booth. And we will be there like scheduled times, like a few hours each day. Sunday, the hours may be a little limited. I have to drive home that night. But Friday and Saturday definitely will be there longer. And we'll also be walking around the show floor and checking things out so we can report those things back to you for those that can't make it. And so, yeah, we're going to have some buttons and we'll be there to say hi. So looking forward to that. But Ken, who is our guest tonight?
Well, we have a returning guest. He was in episodes 371 and 373. And Lynn, what episode are we up to now?
382.
382. That's, I can't believe it.
I can't
Well, I'm sitting here in disbelief, and I will recover by the time we have Jeremiah LeCompte joining us in this episode. He was a contemporary of ours in custodial at Disneyland, but he then went over to work and help open California Adventure. Yeah. And he had a lot of time in. He was there for some really interesting times, and he's got a lot of great stories to share. I think he's more comfortable talking than he was the first time. he's really getting into his groove. And I think you're going to be fascinated by some of the stuff he has to say. It's custodial work, so there's a couple of things that might not be good while you're eating, but but it's all right. It's not too bad. No. So so I'm looking forward to hearing from Jeremiah.
Great. Let's get right into it. Looking to go to Disneyland Resort in California, Walt Disney World Resort in Florida, Aulani in Hawaii, or on a Disney cruise, or Adventures by Disney Vacation, I am here to help you book the best vacation possible, and my expertise and services won't cost you anything extra. Disney pays me, not you. As a perk by booking a package with me, I can also book your dining reservations, park reservations, tours, shuttles, and more. Let me do the hard work while you get excited about your upcoming Disney vacation. I can also book Universal Studios trips as well. By booking with me this year, you will receive 3 months free of our Patreon perk, like our bonus episodes, and join in on our current events live. So contact me at lbarron, that's LBARRON, at concierge.com, that's concierge.com, or thesweepspot@gmail.com.
Well, we are welcoming back to the podcast Jeremiah LeCompte, who we worked with at Disneyland. He's got kind of a rare situation going because he worked with us at Disneyland, and then he went over to help open California Adventure, and he worked there for quite a while, and even up, you know, past the pandemic lockdowns. Jeremiah, welcome back to the Sweep Spot, and I understand you want to go back to the beginning.
Yeah, no, it'd be awesome, you know, because I have a lot of great stories.
Great, we're excited to hear more.
So, there was, you know, I wanted to go back to the days in RLP, actually. There was the, you know, as I told you before, and the listeners, that there, you know, like I was in merchandise, attractions, and foods. Foods I loved about, you know, like maybe second to custodial, because of the fact that I was very popular in foods. Because well, first of all, you know, like I realized by that time, you know, like I wasn't in, you know, really an employee, you know, with the resort. I was only there in a work experience program. So, you know, like as far as, you know, like following the rules, I didn't really, you know, like at that time, I didn't really see the point in following the rules. As far as, you know, because, you know, like in foods, you were told to only serve, you know, only to a certain amount of every portion, you know, like every, you know, like, it, you know, say I was over, you know, like in the in-between serving the cast member, I was serving them, I was making them, the nachos.
Right.
So I give them their chips, and I start pouring on the cheese, and I say, you know, tell me when to stop, you know, and they would be thrown off, you know, because they weren't expecting that. And they were like, oh, okay, stop. Okay. And then, you know, like, then they ask for like something like, you know, jalapenos. And I say, oh, I start scooping on the jalapenos. Okay. How many scoops you want? They're like, okay, I want three. So I, you know, like technically I was only supposed to give two scoops, but you know, I gave three scoops. So they loved me, you know, because I gave them whatever they want.
Yeah.
you know, like there was a woman that I worked with over in merchandise. She wanted, her favorite to order in the in-between was peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Mm-hmm. So
okay.
when I was working the grill, she comes up to me, she's like, okay, Jeremiah, I want a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. So I get her bread and I pile on a whole bunch of peanut butter and a whole bunch of jelly, slap it together. There would be peanut butter and jelly oozing out the sides. And I give it to her, and she'd be all like bright-eyed and happy. And you know, like years later, you know, like when I was in custodial, of course, she would come up to me. She's like, "Oh my God, Jeremiah, I so miss your peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in the in-between." So I was happy that I was able to make other people happy. You know, like it was something that was, you know, like I thought it was a good thing going for, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know, was give people what they want. You know, you go on yeah. from that, you know, like, and I went into custodial as I told you to, but what I didn't tell you to in RLP that, you know, after I got hired into custodial, I actually continued RLP after I got hired into custodial. So what happened was that coincidentally, you know, like my time in RLP custodial was done when I got hired into custodial. So. Mm-hmm. When I got hired into custodial, as you two remember, I told you that I got hired in with those extreme hours, those first 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But I didn't tell you that within those extreme hours, I tried to fit in RLP hours. Which, well, I would say, you know, speaking in hindsight, I was young and somewhat dumb, mm-hmm. and you know, like I tried to do that, but you know, like I'll tell you an example of one day. That first week, I think at the end of that week, I was scheduled, you know, like a rare closing shift over in Small World in custodial, and I said, okay, you know, I'm scheduled closing hours, so I'll try to put in ROP hours into before that shift. But you know where I was put into, the department I was put into in ROP? It was ODB. Outcome pending. So
let me get this straight. You're going to be working custodial later in the day, but you're doing ODV first, outdoor vending.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
All right, I see the problem.
It's very unique.
Yeah.
So, I report to ODV. They sent me to, you know, like I was scheduled in closing Small World, you know, over in Small World area in custodial. So they sent me over to the popcorn cart on the parade route in between the Small World and the Matterhorn.
Yes.
So I go over there and I start selling popcorn and serving it to the guests. And I'm serving of popcorn to guests in popcorn boxes and buckets. And we were trained to only, you know, like in foods, only serve a certain amount. And when I was over there, I was just like, you know, whatever, I'm just going to fill up as much as I can. And I filled up a whole, you know, like overflowing buckets and boxes to the guests all through my hours over there. Mm-hmm. And then I rush over behind Main Street After my hours over there, I changed into my custodian costume, and I rushed back up to Small World. My lead over there, Greg Topzip, he's over there sweeping popcorn like insane. And he's like, I run into him. I'm like, hey, Greg, how's everything? He's like, oh, my God. You know, like, I can't believe all this popcorn all over the place. You know, and he told me, he's like, yeah, the ODB cast member with the popcorn wagon, he told me that this ROP student before him just, like, you know, like, was overflowing buckets and, you know, boxes like crazy. So that's why all this popcorn is all over the place. And I, you know, you are an ROP. Do you know this, like, insane person? And I'm like, no, I wouldn't know this person. So, yeah, no, that was my lesson learned that, you know, there's more than one reason why they tell us whether we're enthused or ODD over to the plant to only serve a certain amount to customers. It's not just for cost purposes, it's for, you know, courtesy to custodial, of course. Wow. So,
I didn't think they thought that.
Yeah, no, they do think that.
That's,
you know,
good. Yeah.
So, yeah, no, there was also the another experience that I thought was a great experience to bring up was over on Main Street. One night I was over on Main Street. I think it was during the pre-parade of the Milan parade over there. I was doing pre-parade over there, and there was, you know, it was just, you know, like a regular night. It didn't, you know, like there wasn't anything spectacular about it. I didn't, you know, like have anything, you know, like out of the ordinary. And, but I noticed along the parade route, there was like a bunch of kids with, these light up swords. You know, you guys remember the light up swords, you know, not the lightsabers. They were the multicolored fold up ones.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They, so these kids had these light up swords. And so, I don't know why, but I got into my head this idea. I'm like, I looked at my broom. I'm like, well, if I hold the broom at the bristles, it looks like a sword. So, you know, maybe I'll go to these kids and, you know, like, just, you know, play with them and stuff. So I went to this boy and girl. I said, you know, like, you know, hey, you know, guys, are you mateys? I'm going to do a sword fight with you. And they're like, well, we're going to do this, you know, we're going to go after you too. So they started swinging their swords at me, and I started fighting them with my broom. And then, you know, like I start, you know, running away from them, you know, sword fighting with them. All these other kids, you know, with swords start seeing this. They start coming up to me and, get, you know, like surrounding me. And they're all doing a sword fight with me all around me. And I'm like, ah, you know, like, so I start running down the street towards the hub and the castle with all these kids chasing me. And all these other kids, you know, with light swords, they see this happening. So they start gathering in on the whole thing. And I'm like running down, back down Main Street, down towards the town square. Running around town square, all these other kids are you know, collecting, you know, getting in to the whole group action of, you know, going after me. And then I started heading back up towards hub and the castle. All of a sudden, you know, like the sound goes over to the speakers. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you know, the parade's about to start in 10 minutes. So I stop. Tell the kids, hey, you better get back to your moms and dads. You're going to get back, you know, the parade's going to start real soon. So they all get back to their moms and dads, and I'm like, oh, shoot, I was just saved by the bell. Anyways, after that night, 10 years later, I'm over in downtown Disney. Mm-hmm. I'm just sweeping, you know, like, and all of a sudden I see in front of me this family, you know, so I'm a mom and dad, two teenage kids, boy and girl. The boy and girl start, you know, like looking at me, pointing at me and saying something to their mom and dad. And all of a sudden they come up to me, they say, hey, you were over on Main Street 10 years ago, weren't you? And I was like, yeah, I think I might have been over there, probably, on Main Street. They said, well, the last time we were here was 10 years ago, and that was the last night we were here. And we have a whole bunch of pictures and video of you, you know, being chased by our kids down Main Street. And you're like the face of Disneyland ever since that night. And I'm like, whoa, oh, okay, that's cool.
That's incredible. Wow.
Yeah, no, that's pretty cool. You know, it's like, you know, that's a story I actually, you know, like when I was lead, I tell customers who look like they were, you know, getting bored with their assignments out in their areas. Mm-hmm. I tell them, I'm like, you know, you got to look for those opportunities to make, you know, like make memories with guests because, you know, like that's gonna come back to you in the end, like it did with me.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, so, for you, you were working the parade route probably every day, and it was no big deal. But for them, it was something they remembered for, you know, all those years.
Yeah. No, it's something that, you know, like people, you know, like cast members, they need to go out of their way sometimes to make sure that they not only entertain themselves, but entertain the guests as well, because, you know, they never know what's going to happen in the end, you know, what, you know, like emotions or people they're going to touch in the end. You know, they're going to make, you know, memories happen that they don't even know about. And, you know, they'll benefit from that in the end, one way or the other.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, you know, going on from there, there was another incident, you know, like while I was on Main Street, but it was one day when it was raining really hard. There was constant rain all day long. And the managers asked the lead over there on Main Street to send me over there, you know, in front of the main gate. This was before, you know, the Esplanade area, you know, the new main entrance area over there. Mm-hmm. You know, we still had the flat parking over, out in front. So they asked me to go in front with a wet vacuum and start sucking up water out of this area that was, I guess it was sinking, you know, over time, the cement or the pavement over time starts sinking in some areas and then doesn't drain into the drains that it was supposed to drain into. So at that time, yeah, that was happening out in front of the west and, you know, side of the main entrance. And I was sent out there with a wet vacuum to start sucking up water out of that area and then, you know, put into a drain area. And I kept on doing that for my whole 8-hour shift out there. But the rain didn't let up. And that lake of water kept on, you know, getting bigger and bigger as I was sucking on water, and, you know, like, I wasn't doing anything to that lake. So towards the end of my shift, a manager comes out. He says, "Hey, Jeremiah, what, you know, how's everything going out here?" And I'm frustrated. I tell him, I'm like, I have no idea why I'm out here. I keep on sucking up all the water out of this lake, and it keeps on getting bigger, and I'm not really doing anything out here. There's no reason for me to be out here. And he said, "Well, you know what? You're actually just making sure that to the guests that we're trying to do something out here, even though you're not doing something out here.
Yeah,
you're creating a show for the guests." And I wasn't satisfied with that answer, because that, you know, like, it didn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm. It's custodial theater. it's theatrical. It's putting on a show.
Yeah, but, you know, that I was never satisfied with that. And there was actually, you know, there was actually at least two managers that I later found out about or knew about that at that time, originally, who didn't, you know, like that answer or reasoning either. Those managers were Charlene Feast and Risa Deos, because I knew they were frustrated with something like that. They were frustrated with those situations. I'll start off with Charlene. Charlene was, she was, of course, you know, in charge of Swing Utility over at Zipline. Charlene was, you know, like, I worked with her a lot, because I was with Swing Utility a lot over to the land, but I didn't really like her too much while I was over there in Zipline. She was really hard on me. And I don't think she really cared for me too much. I have nothing against her for not having anything, you know, having nothing against me or nothing for me, because honestly, I was a kid back then. I was young and dumb, you know, as I said before. But she was always, you know, like saying, "Oh, Jeremiah, you missed this, you missed that." And, you know, I was frustrated left and right. I actually give her the nickname Charzilla at the time, because, you know, like, I, you know, well, first of all, she was like really tall. She was like 6'4", 6'5". And she was like, you know, she had an eagle eye for catching everything that I missed on Swing Utility. But, you know, like, a turning point in our, I guess you can say, working relationship was probably a little after DCA and Downtown Disney opened. They there was a day when I was over there sweeping over Downtown Disney, and I was just a regular cast member, and there was a cast member who came up to me while I was sweeping in front of Wessel Pretzel. I was like, "Dude, you got to come see this." So I went with him over behind Wessel Pretzel. We go over to this manhole that cover that was floating up in the air above the sidewalk that was going along the tram route. Mm-hmm. And we're like, "Whoa, what's going on?" You know, like, this, there was like a bunch of brown sewage that was coming up, and there was so much pressure that was the manhole cover, which is heavy, was floating up on this sewage.
Oh, right.
Coming up. and all the sewage was flowing across the flower bed over into the tram route. So I rushed over, I jumped over the small fence into the tram route. I started running down the tram route to see where the sewage is going. It's going towards a drain that's marked. No dumping. Goes into the ocean.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, like at that time, I'm like, you know, because at that time, I knew that, you know, like if we dump anything into those drains that's not, you know, like rainwater, then, you know, we're going to get fined a lot of money. So I start running back and I jump over to the vents and I start yelling at other customers. I'm like, call the office, get a manager over here, get the lead over here, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, now I'm running up towards the locker and I, you know, like I see other customers. I'm like, you guys get the water vacuums, get the wet vacuums, get them over there, get start sucking up the sewage. You know, like I grab a push broom and I tell them, I'm like, as I'm pushing the sewage back up to you guys suck it up. And so I get everything started over there with what's going on. And you know, like it was insane. Eventually Charlene, you know, like she shows up. She starts, you know, like coordinating the task members, you know, sucking up all the sewage while I'm down below, you know, pushing it up back and forth, back and forth. I'm pushing it up. And, you know, like my 8-hour shift that day turned into a 13-hour shift because of that. And by the end of that 13-hour shift, I had no steam left in me. I was done. I remember when I got out to my truck over in K-Lot, I didn't drive home. I just slept.
Oh, wow.
I was out of it. And then after that day, I was surprised by Charlene. Charlene actually, you know, like, you guys remember the sweeping Mickey pins?
Yeah. You know, yes.
So, you know, the first pin in that collection was the regular, you know, black and white and red Mickey. And then there was the silver. And then there was the gold. And then there was the Maverick. You know, the Maverick was, you know, black, silver, and gold. And it was sweeping in the opposite direction of the other sweeping Mickeys. And I had already received the first sweeping Mickey before that, but Charlene thought that I should get the Maverick after that day. And I was thrown away by that. I was like, whoa. You know, like, yeah, Charlene, all the way up until that point, you know, like, she was the hardest person for me to please over there at the resort. And when I finally realized that, you know, like, hey, you know, like, she actually respects me, you know, I started, you know, respecting her more. And you know, like after that, you know, like things change, you know, with her and I. And you know, she'll always have a place in my heart, you know, over there at the resort.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, she was, you know, she's we've had her on the program and she was a really dedicated manager and really dedicated to giving the guests a good experience.
Yeah. And you know, like that's the one thing that, you know, like I didn't understand when I was younger, but when I was older I understood that, because you know, like I got into a leadership position at DCA where she related more to me, and she kind of mentored me more. So I think that's where, you know, like, things got better with her and me. Because, you know, like, the dynamics of the resort, the whole, you know, the cast member situation over there, as far as, like, there was, I would have to say it's a changing dynamics of maybe a generation, from one generation to the next over there at the resort, where we had to adjust. And Charlene had to adjust to that, you know, changing dynamics.
Yeah.
Where she couldn't be as hard on cast members as she was on me. And she had to adjust. And then when I became a leader, she had to help me adjust as well. You know, because cast members were more likely to go to, you know, like, you know, human resources or whatever, or human relations or wherever. They were more likely to complain about, you know, like, oh, you know, they're harassing me. So that's where I had to adjust. Charlene was adjusting as well. So that's why we both bonded. Then from there, we'll move on to Ray. Ray's the Deos. Ray, you know, like, Ray and I, we didn't start to get to know each other until much later. Because he was over, you know, he didn't move from Disneyland to DCA at first. He stayed over at Disneyland when DCA opened. So much later, you know, like, he came over to DCA. I think it was after we started building Hollywood Tower of Terror. We started building Bugs Land, you know, so I don't know if he said, oh, you know, I'll start to go over there because they're starting to get, you know, more popular over there. but yeah, he came over when at a good time. And when, after he came over, I was somewhere towards 28, and so I decided to have, you know, request a one-on-one meeting with him. And in that one-on-one meeting, I actually shared something very personal with him. I wanted to let him know where I was at in life. And so I told him, I'm like, Ray, I'm 28. You know, like, and I told him, I'm like, my parents, you know, both passed away in a car accident when I was 6. And my mom was 24. My dad was 31. I'm 28. You know, I passed my mom up in age. I'm going to pass my dad up in age. And I'm at that point where I'm trying to make sure that there's something to leave behind if I pass away. And I don't have kids. I don't have a wife. I don't have any. So I think I want to focus on what I have right here and right now with this department, with custodial. And, you know, maybe I should just, you know, like, focus on trying to work myself up the ranks. So he gave me some, you know, some good advice. Told me I need to make sure I focus on what I'm doing right there and now. And you know, like I think it, from that point on, he understood that I had some personal motivation to do whatever it took to make sure that I did whatever he wanted me to do. Mm-hmm. So after that, you know, he and I were walking one day and he stopped and he turned to me. He's like, Jeremiah, I think I need a jack of all trades here in custodial. You think you could be that jack of all trades? And I'm like, yeah, that's great. That sounds cool. And at that time, I thought, you know, like, it sounded cool. Later on in years, though, I found out that that wasn't such the case.
Oh?
That wasn't so cool. But I'll get to that later. After that day, he wanted to start something new in DCA. He wanted to start water weighting in the wharf. So he chose, you know, he, of course, he had me help him do that. So water weighting in the wharf, you know, like many, many people listening to this might ask, why do you have to go water weighting in the wharf when you've never water weighted ever anywhere else over in Zidline? There's a unique situation in the wharf area, and that's when the park was first built. The Imagineers, before the park was built, you know, like, were planning for everything, for the, you know, original attractions over there. One of the original attractions was the Grizzly River Run. And the Grizzly River Run was, you know, like, was that like any other water attraction over at Zidline? And the water attractions over at Zidline, they all have water collection tanks. And these water collection tanks are supposed to, you know, like, suck up all the water that's within that the boats float in within the waterways over there. Mm-hmm. And that is to, that that's mostly done at night so that facilities can actually go through and check all the, you know, like the different instruments within the waterways. So, but it's also done during the day when there's a, you know, like a fault in the systems, you know, and that's when the guests have to be evacuated off the ride. And after they're evacuated off the ride, then all the water is, you know, like sucked up out of there. So in the Grizzly River Run, the water collection tank, unlike any of the other water collection tanks, is actually visible to the guests because it is actually the wharf waterways. And so because of that, you know, like when you go on to the Grizzly River Run, there is like water splash on you and you don't get sick. And that's because the water is actually, you know, like heavily monitored and sterilized, so that sterilization of that water actually goes out into the wharf waterways. Mm. That makes it mute to any food coloring or anything like that, which, you know, like actually over at Zidline they do, and, you know, to cover up all the trash and junk in the water. So yeah, that's the reason why we have to do we, you know, started the wharf water waiting, is because of the fact that we can't do any food coloring in that water. So so Ray had me doing that, you know, and he and I started that up and we got that going. And, you know, like everything was good at first. So what we did, we said, okay, we'll tag out at the Grizzly River Run. A spotter, a person up above, you know, who has a, you know, like a life ring and a trash cart, you know, would be up above to, you know, watch over the person in the water, which was me. And then they would just, you know, like empty the net if I got a lot of junk in there, and then I had to, you know, like send it up to him and he had to dump it. But, you know, like one day there was a point where I was at the deepest point of the water, you know, like where I couldn't go any deeper. And the water started going up on my waders. I was like, okay, you know, maybe I'm slipping or something. So, see, because the thing is that, you know, like the attractions cast members, you know, because we tagged out at the tower, they were supposed to, you know, like know that we were tagged out and that we were in the water. So they would have to call custodial office, let them know, hey, we have to shut down, get the guests off the water and dump the water. So they, you know, cast members have to get out of the water. They didn't do that that day. So the water kept on going up on me. And I was like, oh, shoot, you know, like, so the guy who was my spotter, you know, I looked up at him. I'm like, oh, no, the water's coming up. And so I get up to some rocks right below Sourdough Factory over there. To, you know, like where I knew the water was, you know, like it, even at its deepest point, it wouldn't be too high for me, but I would be trapped on those rocks right below the eating area. And so I got up to those rocks. I was trapped right there. My spotter had a radio. I couldn't have a radio, of course, in the water, but they were trying to get to the manager. The manager wouldn't answer. And so I was stuck there, and I'm like, you know, shoot, and I'm like, whatever. You know, by that time, because of all the, you know, like intense activity I did in the water, I was pretty fit, you know, like, so I was like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to jump up to, you know, like 4 feet above me and pull myself up over the rails. And so I got up and I got out of there, you know, with these heavy waders on me. And that after that day, we had to, you know, like Ray said, okay, we're not going to do this anymore. We're going to stop this right now. And we stopped it for a week. And then we came back to it, and we said, okay, we'll start it back up, but we're going to have someone at the tower. You know, we're going to have someone in custodial with another radio to radio back to the person in, you know, like the spotter or the person in the water. We're going to have them up at the tower so that they can relay that the top, you know, the ride is going down. And so, yeah, you know, that day, you know, was, you know, touch and go. I almost lost my life, and Ray was scared about that, but, you know, like I got through it. And so after that, we tried to, you know, like, imagine another way of cleaning the water over there. And after the water waiting, we actually, we thought of something else. And it wasn't just, you know, like, it wasn't just to, you know, take care of the areas that we were taking care of with the water waiting. We were actually thinking about the deeper areas. The deeper areas where I couldn't go with the waders. So we actually got a fishing pontoon boat over at DCA, which they don't have anymore. There was a, you know, like it was modified fishing pontoon boat. We were able to, you know, drive that out into the water, only during the day, not at night. Cause like I said, the water over there in the wharf waterways is lowest during the day when the ride is operational. So there's only good enough clearance over underneath the bridge over there for the boat back then, when, you know, during the day. And so that worked out, you know, even better for us outside of the, you know, the waiters. And then after that, the next, you know, like big day was actually on a windy day. You know, so on windy days, you're not able to go onto the water, you know, with the waders, because when the wind is up over there, the water gets ripply. And so when the water gets ripples in it, it's hard to see down into the water and see what's under you. So that's why I couldn't be out in the water with waders on windy days. But we had a situation where we had to do something on the water on a windy day. And because on windy days over at the resort, an old call goes out. We're supposed to, you know, like do proper procedures on windy days as far as, you know, taking down the umbrellas, tying them down, making sure they can't be blown out. But I guess the foolscap members over in the wharf area didn't do that properly. And one of their umbrellas blew up and out and into the water over there, into the wharf. So they called custodial. And the manager over there, Bill Hillis, he comes out to me. He's like, Jeremiah, you have to come with me over to the boat. And I'm like, okay. And so I go out with him to the boat, and he drives the boat out with me on it. And he's like, hey, you know what? We got to get this umbrella out of the water. And I'm like, okay. And so the wind is like, you know, max 20 miles an hour. And we're being blown all over the place on the water. He's able to keep control of it, actually, the boat. But when I grab the pole, you know, and the umbrella, and I, you know, was able to, you know, like pull it out of the water, it turns us into a sailboat and starts, you know, like blowing us into the rocks. And so I'm like, you know, I'm pulling like crazy at this umbrella. And, you know, Bill's yelling at me, hey, yeah, what? Close that umbrella. And I'm like, I'm trying, you know, like, because it's stuck open with a pin. Uh-huh. So I try to get that pin out, and I get it out. And, you know, like, it was so hard. It took all my strength. But I got it out, and I get this umbrella closed. And, unfortunately, there was a lot of damage done to the boat, though, on the rocks. Unfortunately, that led to us not having the boat eventually.
Oh no.
So, but anyways, that was the short term of our, you know, like boat life over there at DCA and custodial.
Wow.
But then, but,
you know,
then
it's a challenge to keep things clean. I mean, you know, you've got these things, every part of that park needs to be kept clean somehow. You know?
Yeah. And, you know, like Ray, I appreciate Ray Sadeos for the fact that he was willing to go outside the boundaries to do that. He wanted to make sure that anything and everything was done to do that. You know, I don't know. Maybe that was taken somewhat from where he came from over at Disneyland with, you know, like, I know he did, you know, like, kind of like a presentation to cast members about, you know, walking in Walt Disney's footsteps. And
Walt Disney, you know, and that, you. Yeah.
Yeah. So he, I understand that he kind of, got that inspiration from Walt Disney himself, probably, or knew that of him. And I was very lucky to be able to get that from Ray. And then, after that, Ray wanted so much more from me. And unfortunately, he got me, trained on a lot of stuff with bank custodial, but only as an operator. And a lot of day custodians, they're trained on stuff that night custodial does, equipment and everything, but only as operators. But what he wanted for me as the jack of all trades, he wanted me to be the trainer on everything. Everything with day custodial, everything with night custodial. He wasn't able to get that done before he retired. But he did pass that along to Mary Cobb, who took over for him. After he retired, Mary Cobb actually, kept that going. One of her first tasks was getting me on track with, being scheduled into night custodial. When I did that, we were building Buena Vista Street and Cars Land. And at that time, I was working with Marcy Childress, and I had worked with her for years, ever since the land. So she relied on me a lot. And when she heard that I was going to night custodial, she's like, "Termine, I can't have you go into night custodial and not help me still." And I'm like, "Okay, Marcy, I'll do what I can." So I worked with the scheduler and our training manager to work out a schedule where I could do what I had to do as far as being trained as a trainer in night custodial and still help Marcy in day custodial. And so what I did was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I would be in day custodial. Thursday, I would have off until that night. I would be off until Thursday night at 11 p.m. I would start in night custodial, Thursday into Friday, then Friday night into Saturday. Then I'd have, Saturday and Sunday off, but, part of the Saturday day. And then come back into day custodial at 7 o'clock in the morning on Monday.
That's a lot.
Yeah. That was intense for 6 weeks straight. I was security, eventually, saw me coming in custodial whites at 7 o'clock in the morning, and then saw me coming into night custodial in night custodial blues at 11 o'clock at night. And they're like, "Man, you're Mr. 24/7 here."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Yeah, kind of feel like that." I was pretty worn out, after that 6 weeks, but I got everything accomplished. And it was intense because in night custodial, it's pretty hard conditions. Harder than I thought of before I went into night custodial. Especially doing the day hours and the night custodial hours, I was I was humbled by that experience. And at the end of the experience, I told Mary Cobb, I'm like, "I'm glad you're doing this. You're having me do this when I'm 31 and not when I'm 40.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure.
And You know, but, you know, the thing is that, you know, like I said, you know, like, being the jack of all trades and custodial was even harder as years would come, you know, after that. It was not, you know, like a pretty experience after that. Because there was one day, you know, like I was a Hollywood lead, day Hollywood lead.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a call towards noon from a manager, Ken Kimberling, to 87, the World of Color viewing area. So I left a responder over Hollywood, go all the way across the whole entire park to the World of Color viewing area. I see a bunch of managers over there, you know, like facilities. There was theme park two, you know, the duty manager in charge of DCA that day, and Ken. And then there was day utility cast members over there. They were in the middle of a bunch of mud over there.
Ooh.
At the World of Color viewing area. The whole entire area was covered in mud. And these cast members, you know, the day utility cast members, they were shoveling. They had shovels. They were shoveling mud up into hardliners. And I'm like, you know, I walk up to the manager. I'm like, this is pretty bad. And they're like, yeah, that's why we called you over here. And I'm like, okay. What do you need right now? And they're like, well, we contained the situation, you know, a water pipe burst and pumped up all this mud into the area. That's fixed. But we need to get this area cleaned up and ready for a World of Color show later on tonight. And I'm like, okay, well, those cast members down there shoveling up mud, they're just there for show. They're not actually going to be doing anything, you know, like as far as getting this area ready for the show. And they're like, yeah, we know, but washdown trainer. So you know all the water connections around here. We can't find any water connections to hook up the hose to. And I'm like, yeah, that would be because we're not supposed to do hard washdowns in this area. This area, you know, like the last time we did a hard washdown, or Night Studio did a hard washdown in this area, they took down the system, the World of Color system, for months after that. They're like, oh, yeah, right. And I'm like, yeah. So, you know, I wouldn't advise for us to do a washdown in this area. So the next thing is that we're going to have to do something to clean up all this mud. So other than shoveling up the mud, so get those cast members, stopped with shoveling up the mud. I would say have them go up to the Silly Symphony swings. There's a right up. A walk behind scrubber over there. There's also a walk behind scrubber over underneath the Paradise Grill. Get them to get the house, get them filled up with water, start edging out this area, picking up the mud around this area. I will go back over to the office. There is a ride-on scrubber over there. I will fill it up with water, fill it up with gas, get over here, keep in mind, it only travels 2 to 4 miles an hour, so it's going to take a while to get around this whole entire park with that thing. By the time I get up to the World of Color gates over here, you should have some World of Color, or attractions pass members to do guest control, block an area into from that gate over into the World of Color viewing area for me to drive the ride-on scrubber into this area. I will get this area cleaned up, and we'll be good to go for the World Television show tonight. So they're like, okay, let's do it. So everything worked out as I planned. We got everything cleaned up. I had to, I still had to, manage the Hollywood area while I was doing all this. And, because they didn't get any other lead over there. So it was a tiring day, especially cleaning up all the mud that I sucked up into that big ride-on scrubber. The ride-on scrubber is, for anyone listening to this, is like a street sweeper, except a more detailed street sweeper. Mm-hmm. It actually scrubs the ground harder than a street sweeper. The walk behind scrubbers actually are smaller versions of the ride on sweeper. So they do the same thing. They scrub the ground and they suck up. They put down water or solution and they suck it all up. So that's what these machines do. But that whole process of cleaning up that area that day was a pain to me physically.
Yeah, sounds like it.
The next most painful physical demanding activity I had was after my last motorcycle accident. My last motorcycle accident was my worst. I had wiped off the skin off the side of my whole arm.
Oh boy.
I didn't know it at the time, but I broke my ankle, but I didn't know it because, the emergency room that, I paid $60,000 to, didn't find a fracture in my ankle. It was only the insurance that sent me to a specialist that found that fracture. So I spent 2 days after that motorcycle accident in bed. Sodio, of course, knew that I was in the motorcycle accident. But 2 days later, they actually called me. And so I picked up the phone. I'm in bed in pain. I said, there's the manager on the other end of the phone. They're like, Jeremiah, you're not feeling good right now, but Petra, our production manager, she's like, Petra wanted me to call you and ask you to come, if you can come in tomorrow, because we got a really, really important job that needs to be done tomorrow that we need you here for. And I'm like, what's the job? And she's like, well, we were asked to clean the elevator shafts of the Guardians of the Galaxy. Oh. And I'm like, whoa, that sounds cool. So I'm like, okay, I'll make it. So I made it in. All bandaged up and bleeding. I made it in.
Yeah.
And I show up over there behind Guardians of the Galaxy. And I meet up with the crew over there. And Petra shows up. And she sees my bandages. She sees me all bloodied up, my bloodied up bandages. And she's like, oh my God, Jeremiah, I didn't know it was that bad. And she's like, and then she turns to my cast members. She's like, you guys better just do whatever Jeremiah tells you to do. And don't let him do anything. You just do everything that he says. And I'm like, okay. But in the end, you know what? Honestly, it wasn't easy at all, because those elevator shafts, they don't just go up through the tower itself. They go down below the towers. And below the towers, there's no elevators that go down. There's only steps. And oh. So, like I told you guys, I didn't know that my ankle was fractured at the time. So it was all swollen up and painful. And I was going down 3 flights of stairs down to the very bottom of these elevator shafts, going back up and down, up and down, up and down. And it was the most painful experience. But I went through it. And even after that, Petra told me, even years after that, she's like, Jeremiah, the most memorable experience that I remember you knowing that you were the best that we have is when you came in after your motorcycle accident as badly banged up as you did. And you did, you did that job perfect. So.
Wow. That's dedication.
It's not easy to do the back of all trades in custodial.
But clearly, you've been involved in a lot of different activities. All the different things. Some people just go to work there and they just they just end up sweeping, or they end up just working restrooms or whatever. But you've been involved in all these different things, and it could probably take a lot longer to go over all of it. I'm learning all these things that I didn't know before. And, so I definitely want to talk more about this, on the show, off the show, all kinds of stuff. But, I'm amazed. And, you were there through a certain time period that's pivotal. So there's a lot more to go over, but we don't want to keep you longer right now.
Yeah.
But we'd like to talk with you again sometime and get more of that. It's very touching, the relationship that you've had with various people that we've worked with too.
Mm-hmm. Different time period, than we were there. Different place. We didn't work at California Adventure, so.
Right, but we worked with a lot of those people who mm-hmm. were over there.
Yeah.
So thank you, Jeremiah. Any parting words this time?
It's been an emotional ride over in custodial, but the thing that I can say is that it's the people and it's the memories that makes it all worth it. Mm-hmm. Whatever I had to go through, whatever I had to endure, I'll never want to do it any other way. Because the people you can, you Lynn, everyone. Everyone makes it worth it. So that's my last word.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to have you back and continue this. I know you have many more stories, and I think our listeners will be excited to hear more about it, but they will definitely enjoy this one for sure. Thank you again.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Wow, Ken, another great episode.
Yeah, Jeremiah has so many stories to tell, just so many, because he was there for so long and he saw so many things, and he was there, for some pivotal events and stuff like that. But, he touched upon something very personal. Well, a few things that were very personal.
Yeah.
But he did talk about, how it's never a subject you want to bring up. You kind of let the person bring it up. Mm-hmm, and he talked about, being orphaned basically at a very young age. and you know that's reverberated throughout his life. But you know, he's just, there's just a lot there, and we can just sit back and let him tell his stories. So thanks again for Jeremiah for coming on. Thank you for sharing those things with us, and thank you for listening all the way till now. We've always got important things to say right now. Like what, Lynn?
Well, we have, this is the point of the show where I like to read reviews, and we have a new one.
All righty. That's great.
This one was just past Monday, whatever date that was. This one is from Jody Mom of Four, is the name here.
Jody Mom of Four. How do you have time to listen?
I don't know. It's titled Can't Get Enough, 5 stars.
All right.
Says here, I've been a listener for quite a while, and since I've been caught up, I decided to go back and listen to episodes from before I joined. It's just so fun hearing all these stories and picturing what everyone is talking about. I live in Seattle, but we try to take our kids to the park once a year. My first trip was 1993 at 11 years old, and it's so fun to listen to people who have worked there and have a different perspective than a regular guest. Thank you for filling the days with this awesome podcast.
Aw. That's sweet.
So much. It is. Thank you. Really appreciate that.
Mother of four, kind of like my mother. You know. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how you find the time, but that's the great thing about podcasts is you can listen to them while you're doing other things, like, you know, performing surgery or, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Hopefully not that, but yeah, chores, and you can even listen while you're at the dentist, you know, laying, you know, sitting there in the chair. So
it's like anesthesia, you know.
Right. No. Well, it's the, we fit right in with the drilling sounds. So
yeah.
No, but thank you. We really do appreciate those, and we'd love to read those every episode. If someone hasn't written a review and you've been listening for a little bit, or even if this is your first episode and you'd like to leave a review, we only read the good ones. No, we read all of them.
We weep over the negative ones. We just huddle in the corner and weep, you know.
And then we come find you. No.
That's right. We hunt you down. That's right. You better not, you know.
Thank you so much for listening. Remember to subscribe to our podcast. If you're not subscribed, that way you don't miss out when a new episode is released. And we'll talk to you next time.